Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 731, recorded on August 15th, 2024. This is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. My name is Martin Spriggs, and joining me, as usual, a state away, neighboring state at least. We share a border, we share a river, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to be joining you on apparently Wells Blue Day. We didn't coordinate specifically.
Yeah, those of you watching at home, yes. Blue is the color of the day. How have you been? Yeah. Heard you've been under the weather.
Yeah, that silly COVID virus grabbed me, and I don't like it, but feeling much better now. So thanks for asking.
And glad you're back in the saddle.
Yeah, for sure. Wouldn't want to miss Wells Tech. I mean, got to get well for that. So
yeah, if you get sick, it's got to be enough time to get healthy for Wells Tech. Yeah,
that's right. Priorities. Mm-hmm. So, and especially today, because we're wrapping up a really fun series, something I've enjoyed all summer long. We've been talking to people from across the Synod, across the world, across technology vendors, all kinds of folks that we've had the opportunity to interview this summer. And today's show is definitely one worth labeling a grand finale because of our guest today.
Yeah, Pastor, District President Joel Zank. We could call him a friend of the show. We've had him on before. And we work with Pastor Zank quite a bit in our activities here at the Center for Mission and Ministry, because he is kind of the call system czar, guru, chief spokesperson, and he helps us figure out requirements and how best to create a system that all the district presidents can use and all congregations and schools essentially benefit from as we're putting together these call lists for the many vacancies that are out there. So he was good enough to break away from his normal activities and spend 15, 20 minutes with me. And we talked about all kinds of things related to DP responsibilities, use of technology. I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. So let's take a listen. Joining us today, Pastor Joel Zank, pastor at Mount Olive Lutheran in Appleton, Wisconsin, as well as the district president of the Northern Wisconsin District. Joel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. Hopefully you've had a chance to do a little bit of relaxing. I know for a district president, that usually means a conference, you know, probably in the June timeframe. And then you just were emerging from, as you were talking pre-show about assignment day. That's always a big thing. But before we jump into kind of those things, those DP kind of duties, tell us a little bit about your call and family, hobbies, those kinds of things, the personal side of Joel Zank.
Sure. Thanks. Been serving here at Mount Olive for, it'll be 28 years. So a lot of people's lifetimes, a lot of baptisms and watching kids grow up and
generations
do all kinds of
neat
things. Yeah. Married to Cindy. We've just celebrated our 39th wedding anniversary. We have one daughter.
Big one next year.
Big one next year. One daughter, Carrie, married to Carl. Gave us a beautiful little granddaughter 2 years ago, Samantha.
Nice.
And then just shared the news that, God willing, grandchild number two will arrive in January. So
congrats.
We're pretty excited about that. Yeah. We, as far as other calls, the call to the district to serve in this role as district president came 10 years ago. So I was just reelected at the June convention that you were talking about. For my sixth term. So I've been doing this for a little while. That seems like
no term limits up there.
No term limits. Yeah, they'll probably be crying for them soon, but not yet. So that's been just a very different different ministry, but as you know, that our synod is set up in such a way as that I get to still shepherd here at Mount Olive, so that brings a good mix, and I think it's a great idea the way that we do it. So
You're in one of our busier districts, a lot of our congregations and schools in the Northern Wisconsin district. Talk a little bit. Some of our listeners may not understand how that's all set up and what a district president or what the Conference of Presidents does.
yeah. Geographically, the smallest district. So I have probably the least travel time of all of my compatriots. But size-wise, we're over 150 congregations, 60,000 souls plus, lots of teachers, lots of pastors. It keeps us busy. You asked about the role itself. The Constitution and bylaws will tell you that we supervise doctrine and practice. I like to think of us district presidents as pastoral councils to the district. We're the district pastor, if you will, which means we get to shepherd a lot of called workers and then advise their congregations and help them. I'm sure every day, I'm sure it looks the same in all the districts, but we're making call lists, and then we're talking to congregations as they're building, the requirements that they have for their calls. What do they looking for in a pastor, a teacher? And then once those calls are issued, lots of conversations with the folks holding the calls. Had one of those last week. Many pastors and teachers will call and just say, what do you see from your 50,000-foot view of the place to which I'm holding the call? So get to have those conversations. Probably more of late, lots of conversations with individuals who are interested primarily in going into the teaching ministry, perhaps from second careers, or Wells members who are public school teachers and they see the great need we have. And so I probably over the last year have done 20 of those interviews. So
Thanks.
keeps me busy that way too.
Yeah, for sure. I was just thinking as you were talking, I don't know that we've ever interviewed a synodical council member. You also serve on the synodical council.
I do.
Some of our listeners probably don't know what that group does either. Tell us a little bit about that and how COP and the SC complement each other, let's say.
Yeah, the Conference of Presidents is working on the supervision of doctrine and practice, and we have responsibilities that connect to those things, calling responsibilities for our Ministry of Christian Giving on that side of things. On the Synodical Council, that group is charged with making sure that the work of the synod continues in between conventions. So that has laymen serving from all over the synod, and then together with advisors and three conference of president men sit on that synodical council, and we serve as the liaisons between the two groups, with of course our chairman.
I know long before I started working for the Synod, I always thought of the SC and the COP as this black box, group that, they hold this convention every couple years and they meet behind closed doors. And, that's maybe long ago that was the case, but these are real, people interested in ministry, prayerfully approaching their work, and it's neat to see how that operates and the care and concern and the love that they have for not only their Savior but God's people and how they try and put things together to enable ministry.
I leave every synodical council meeting just so thankful for the people that God supplies, for the administration of our synod, and the, as you say, the great care, whether they've been given financial skills or just heart for ministry, but they're there and they're informed, they're involved. And I often think we need to just get those fellows in front of our pastors and teachers as often as we can, so that they can hear directly from them, so that they aren't the black box guys that you were talking about.
Let's talk a little bit of technology. One thing that we work pretty close, my office works pretty closely with you on, is the call system. which has come a long ways over the years. Used to be a very manual process, and we've hopefully put some automation and some tools in there that help. So we've got a high vacancy rate, you know, pastors and teachers. How has the call system enabled kind of the efficient, I'd call it, production of call lists these days? It's, I'm sure if you had the volume like this, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, almost would be an impossible task.
You know, and I was there to witness it firsthand. You know, early in my ministry, my associate in the Minnesota district was elected district president, so Pastor Larry Cross, and there was the beginnings of a database at that time called Progress. But I can remember sitting with Pastor Cross and pulling out the Synod yearbook and going through names of guys that maybe could be on call lists. We maybe had, I don't know if we had 25 or 30 vacancies throughout Synod. Now we have five times that. And so I would say it's about 9 years ago or so already that we developed that database that we're using called WellSource. And you were a big part of that and our tech team. And it took what we already had in that rather, I hesitate to call it crude, but it was. I can remember it had the blue DOS screen that came up inside of a window environment yet, and just revolutionized that. And it's changed the way we can do our work, so that we have the ability to produce call lists in a relatively easy fashion, from searching who's available based on our guidelines to looking for skill sets, gifts that God has given individuals and that congregations may be asking for, so we can come up with a group of names. And then, because it's all happening in real time and we're all working on call lists constantly, we can see when somebody's on another list and start to have conversations, which take place all the time between the district presidents. So it's a very valuable tool.
Yeah, constantly evolving. We're trying to figure out how to get even better data into the system. And it's not that it's a robotic process. There's certainly prayer and consideration as you're looking at all the names, but it's good to start with something. Rather than the universe, you have the ability to do a little bit more fine-grained control over, you know, who you're looking at. And I would think especially the school's office benefits maybe even more because their volume is so much higher than the pastor list too. But
It really is when we are, when we're in that teacher call window season, I just think of the number of lists that they compile in a month, always knowing that when a call is accepted, they will have more work to do because that will create a vacancy in a new place. At least with the 12 of us, it might be a vacancy that, yeah, it's going to be created, but it might belong to a different brother for a short period of time. So
Right.
that is very, very true.
So if on the outside it looks like, you know, total madness, there is method to it. There is, you know, there's
You know,
something
there is. I
behind
had to smile. I think it was it at the last Synod convention? Someone there was a memorial just suggesting that, technology is available to us where we wouldn't have to, have somebody get two calls on a particular day. And we do our best to make sure that that doesn't happen, but it actually is part of that. You said madness, but it's part of the plan, right? Just to have a viable pool of candidates. We have given ourselves that permission to have individuals on two call lists on a given day. But as I told you, we see when that's happening and we have conversations to talk about the wisdom of a particular individual being on two lists and come to a thought about that. The other thing that we've done and that's changed in the 10 years I've been doing this is my first call list probably had six or seven names on it for pastors, and that was pretty typical. And I would say now they have three names,
Three or
and
four.
that's pretty typical throughout Synod too.
Maybe a more general question on technology. How, as you're thinking about your use, you know, of technology and technology in general, how has it kind of helped you keep the trains running on time, so to speak? And maybe not just even as a district president, but as a pastor, what kind of tools do you rely on the most? I'm thinking they're probably leaning toward the communication side, but what do you use?
Yeah, very much. I appreciate, at Wells we use Teams, and that's a very valuable tool to me. I do a lot of my communicating, especially with folks that I need to talk to at the CMM, and have conversations and do messaging throughout the day, and get quick answers to things that otherwise I would be, waiting on for some period of time. A lot of email. I can't get over it. It doesn't stop. There's probably 50 or 60 emails during the course of the day. And while that may not be quite as personal, it certainly allows us to accomplish a lot of work and get a lot of answers to people and help them that way. A lot of appreciate the medium we're using right now, to be able to Zoom in to meetings and not necessarily travel. I know some of that started during COVID, but we found out how effective it could be to instead of driving up to Houghton, I have zoomed into a call meeting and conducted a call meeting from a distance, and saved the 10 hours of driving that would be part of that kind of work. So it isn't something we try to use all the time, but it certainly supplements the work that we've been doing.
Let's change direction here a little bit. And in general, my observation, and just kind of working with my team and some of the requests we get from the COP and other areas within the Senate, is a lot more interest in and in tune with data from statistical reports and other sources that we're collecting data. We've always done that to a certain degree, but I think we're doing more with the data at this point as far as reports and generating metrics and doing some analysis. What's your take on that? Tell us about a few of the reports and metrics that you're interested in, and how they might influence or help decision making either at the COP level or other levels.
Yeah, I do appreciate that. I mean, we make use of a number of reports, but to be able to, especially I think on the district level and with our district presidium, to just kind of monitor at least in some fashion the what we are thinking of as the health of a congregation. We'll look particularly for trends. Maybe it'll be worship attendance trends. We meet regularly with our circuit pastors. A lot of that we do by Zoom too. When we have our regular every other month the presidium meetings, we will usually bring in by Zoom a circuit pastor or two or three and have conversations with them and just ask them to give their assessment of the congregations that they have in their circuit. And then we've had a chance to look at some of that ahead of time, and hopefully in a proactive way, help congregations that may be in the early stages of some difficulties, and counsel with them. We've had, especially I think in our Midwest districts, a number of congregations that are looking to merge for mission, and to understand that they can do ministry together better than being individual congregations. So we've got that. That's something that, while it's not data driven, I think the data bears that out, that there's value in pursuing counseling from congregational services. I'm afraid our district alone probably keeps Pastor Hines' office pretty busy just with the number of questions we have. I don't think there's a week goes by where we don't have, some kind of contact with, can you help us do this or help us do that? So a lot of that, as I say, the data is reflective, I think, of what's happening, but it allows us to see some of those trends in advance.
And their tools that we have are more and more useful and more user-friendly than they ever had been before. Used to have to be very specific about the data requests and the report format and the columns and the rows, and now so much more flexible in the visualizations that you can do. That's got to be helpful. So,
It is. It
glad you're
is.
taking advantage of that. Maybe one last question. You, from your vantage point as a district president or member of the Synodical Council or COP, anything we should be adding to our prayer list as we think about the work of the Synod or your work as in the COP?
Thanks for asking that. I, from, and I know this is the case with my brother district presidents. I think every day we get up and ask God for wisdom and courage and understanding and patience. And those are wonderful blessings from God's Spirit to pray for the leaders of our church body. I think I work with a wonderful group of men, whether it's on the Synodical Council or the Conference of Presidents. And I wish the people sitting in our pews could see the spirit at which our work is done, the collegial spirit. Everybody, of course, is concerned about their own district, but when we're sitting together in a room, we've got the church body and the kingdom of Christ in our minds. That shows itself at assignment time, but in every meeting. So I think if people would pray that that spirit continues and that God would bless us, that would be a wonderful thing to add to a person's prayer request.
Done. Thank
and
you.
Appreciated. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Joel, really appreciate your time and your ministry, whatever form that takes. You have a lot of hats, and we appreciate you swapping those out once in a while too, and just being what God's asked you to do. So thanks for using your gifts.
Well, thank you. And we got to talk a little technology today. I'm always so appreciative of you and the team at our Center for Mission and Ministry. The good work that's done with technology is appreciated. It's put to good use, and it serves the kingdom well.
Our pleasure and privilege. Thanks, Joel. Have a good day.
God bless. Bye now.
Thank you, Joel, for your time and your continuing work as a pastor in our synod and as a district president in the Northern Wisconsin District. Always neat to talk to Joel. He's always got a smile on his face, and I think it would be a joy to be in his district, because I think he's got things under control, hopefully.
Utmost respect for Pastor Zank, and just love it that you closed with that question about prayers. And, you know, these are real people out there doing very challenging responsibilities and carrying them out to God's glory. And we just appreciate the work of the entire Conference of Presidents and Synodical Council, as you guys discussed. Very important work, and very, very much enjoy supporting that work.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to miss our series, although we will continue to talk to folks, you know, from around the Synod as we have need and desire, and as maybe you all recommend to us. Yeah, you should talk to this person. They're doing some neat things in this area. Please do that. So, all right, Sally, let's move on to the rest of the show. And that includes our picks of the week. And are you concluding your summer professional development bingo? I'm excited to hear.
I am. I'll just do a quick screen share for those watching. I've snagged the Ditch That Textbook Summer Professional Development Bingo card this past May, I think, is when it came out. And I've been working my way through various blocks that are part of the card, and maybe adding a few as I go. And in particular, today I did add one because my summer has been very busy around the product Canva, which is something I've picked in the past, but I had to include it on my professional development card because I've learned so much this summer about it. And I also just wanted to show and tell and share with you guys the things that I've been doing in Canva. Let's try that screen share one more time. And probably many people are familiar with Canva and the fact that it's a free tool on the web, and you can go out there and do all kinds of image editing with it. Also very much geared towards different ways of sharing images and graphics and design elements, because it kind of prompts you of what are you trying to create. Do you need a document or a presentation or an Instagram post or whatever it may be? And once you select that, then it comes up with different designs, and you can search all kinds of ways in here to find different designs. It also has elements and text and things that you can add to designs. So that's probably been my main go-to. I'm looking for, perhaps a birthday invitation or a birthday Instagram post, whatever it may be, and it'll come up and give you something that you can work with. And it's kind of laid out nice. And if I don't like background colors or whatever, I can definitely click in and make changes to things. It's pretty straightforward, especially once you grab one. It even offers you other options kind of in the same line of thinking or whatever as you pick different ones. Just really easy and quick, and so many options out there. However, if you've played with it at all, you may notice that oftentimes there's little crown elements on different things that are available. And when you see the crown, that means you're not able to use that unless you have a pro account. So we can talk a little bit about that. I think the pro accounts are maybe $15 a month if you pay monthly, or $120 a year. And up to this point, I really hadn't seen the need. I'd gotten a free trial and played with it, and it's nice. You have more options, like I said, more designs to pick from and things like that. But I didn't really see the need for it specifically, until I learned a lot more about what exactly it means to have a pro account. This summer I did delve into that, and one thing I realized is that the pro account has a huge complement of stock images and videos. So you can make use of a large selection, and it's searchable and easy to access. I was doing some searching earlier on Autumn, and it comes up with just tons of different images that you can make use of. Maybe I want Autumn vase. Let's see, this is me trying this on the fly. So here's a vase of flowers. It says happy birthday to you on this image. Maybe I just want the flower vase by itself. Whatever it is that I'm looking for, I can look through all the different options that are available for images. When I have an image, there is edit capabilities for the image, and this is some of the things that I was learning about. For instance, the background remover will just check out your image and remove whatever background is there. This one appears to have a couple of layers of backgrounds, and so it didn't make it completely clear, but you get the idea that it can definitely remove backgrounds very easily and quickly, and usually you're left with kind of just the image itself floating on a background. There's also layers to images, so if you have different components that are a part of your image or whatever it is, you have the ability to check out the layers, and rearrange them and things like that. It's all kind of laid out there for you. So if you want to get rid of a layer, you can just click into a layer and get rid of it, or send something to the back. There's my image by itself. Let's say I want to get rid of this background. There's the image kind of floating. And so turning on the layers gives you lots of capabilities. And I know layers is a huge thing, like in the Adobe design world and things, but this makes it a lot simpler for me, just kind of a hack at image editing and things. It just makes it a lot simpler to be able to turn on layers and see what's there and rearrange them as needed. So maybe I want this ugly black star to be behind the flowers. I can just drag and rearrange pretty easily and put things in front of or behind in that way. Let's see if I can get something a little bit nicer looking now that I've kind of demonstrated those things. Here's another birthday image, and I wanted to just do a quick demo of the resize and magic switch. So right now I have this size for an Instagram post, but not in portrait size or as a story or a Facebook post that's in a long. So I can just kind of click a button and it takes the design elements that are on the screen and it resizes them to fit something different so that I don't have to, let's see, I'm going to open that one. I don't have to work at it to get the sizing just right or whatever. Maybe I want to do a little bit of adjustment after it's done, but in general, you can take and resize things so that you're kind of using the same branding or design with a lot of different layouts and direction for a lot of different things. So that's really easy to work with and a lot of fun. Another thing that I wanted to point out, and this kind of goes along with a lot of our recent discussions, is that there are many apps that are part of Canva. And we've probably talked about this on the podcast before, Martin, but some of them we haven't really explored, and that's because there's so many. You can focus on just the AI-powered apps, and the list just goes on and on. I think they're adding them every single day because the list just keeps getting longer. So if you're interested in, say, creating images with AI, pretty much all the players are right here. You don't have to go to DALL-E, for instance, which is ChatGPT's version of AI image creation. You can use them built right into Canva, and as you make use of them, your images then are saved on a Canva canvas so that you can do the layering and the color changing and all the finesse that you can do with your Canva, especially your pro subscription. So I have played a good bit with some of these. One that I was playing with this morning was just generating coloring book images, for instance. And maybe as a teacher, I have a list of animals we're studying in social studies or whatever it might be, and you can come out here and just give it a description, an AI type prompt, and it'll generate different coloring book images for you. So that might be something that's useful in the classroom, in the lower elementary ages and things like that. So I think that there are a ton of great videos out there that probably explain all these different things a lot better than I can in just 5 minutes' time. But I have just been overwhelmed by the capabilities of Canva Pro and something that I added to my budget. Because I really think it's worth the investment. Use it in so many different ways.
I've heard it said, I think, by a number of teachers that if there were one online tool that they, if they could only have one online tool to use, it would be Canva, because it is so flexible. And now with the AI capabilities, pretty cool. And they've come a long way. It used to be a lot more simplistic, and now you can do almost anything, including some vector art kinds of things, image manipulation, all of the magic tricks you can do with an image too. And you can even obviously save your stuff, but you can put your own logos up there, so you've got them available if you want to put those on your images, etc. So it's
Right.
done
I
a nice
didn't show
job.
the color palettes, but it actually builds out a color palette from your logo that's available to you at all times. So if you want to be consistent with your coloring and things, my happy birthday graphics, I could switch out some of the colors to use some of my logo colors or whatever my desire might be.
Yeah, it's kind of an every man or every woman's Photoshop kind of tool. You
Worth
don't
it
have to.
to invest some time learning what all those other things are over there that you've been ignoring. That's kind of how my summer went, was like, oh wow, and it can do this, so it's a lot of fun.
I haven't used Canva a lot, but I'm assuming they've got some good training resources too. And certainly there's, I'm sure, a ton of YouTube videos from people just
Absolutely.
sharing. So cool.
And just for what it's worth, to complete my bingo line, I did spend some time on Mirror. I mentioned that in our last show, that that was the one I needed to get a bingo. And Mirror turns out to be a really cool tool as well. Unless you sign up for a 60-day trial with them, and it looks like it would be pricey and things. This is, an investment to go this route. You can't really try it out, but there's some great case studies out there and videos and things that explain the concept. The idea is that this device is set up that students log into and interact with, and it talks back and forth with them, leading them through reflection on any learning activities. And it feels like they're talking to a human. There might be a little video involved, and the questions are responsive using AI technology, obviously. And it even tells them to give it a high five and to touch the screen and give a high five and stuff. So feedback from students and the case studies and things that I read were really impressive, and I'll include some links to those in the show notes. If you're looking for something for reflection station kind of concept, that's what Mirror will do for you.
Cool. Thanks. All right, my pick of the week. And from time to time, I do some shopping. And this shopping experiment was with different kinds of browsers. I think the last time I talked browsers, I was talking about the Arc browser. Since then, I have looked at a few others. And as new versions come out and as enhancements are made, it's good to take a look and see. And the one that I've been trying out lately is Microsoft's version of their browser, which is Edge. And I actually have been very impressed. I've talked about Edge in the past, and they've actually made some really nice improvements over the last, year, year and a half, something like that. We are in the CMM, a Microsoft shop, so we use all the Microsoft tools, Outlook and Word and those kinds of things. And Edge seems to work the best, surprise, surprise, with those kinds of tools. So it makes sense for us to use it. But I like a lot of the tools that they've baked in that aren't available in things like Chrome. It is based on the Chromium engine, so you're going to get good rendering and you're not going to have sites that won't come up in Edge. So that's one good thing. Then Microsoft layers on top of it its own syncing and those kinds of things. But some of the features that are really nice that they've added recently is those people that use Microsoft 365 like we do, they have something called workspaces so that you can create a collection of browser tabs or sites that you can share and collaborate on. So that's kind of nice if you're working on a project and you've got a number of different things that you want everybody to have access to rather than shopping around links or whatever. Workspaces does that. I've talked in the past about collections, which is kind of like a tool that allows you to bookmark groups of links. I've talked about Raindrop in the past. That's kind of what I use for that, but kind of as an alternative. So collections are nice. Outlook at a glance is another feature where you don't have to leave your browser to check your email or your calendar. So that's built right in. Another thing that I've kind of grown used to when I was kicking the tires on Arc is sidebar tabs. Rather than across the top, things get pretty crowded. And as you add more tabs, you begin to lose the ability to see what's in a tab. You get the first letter or sometimes even just the logo of the site that you're on. So if you've got 20 tabs running across the top, you really don't have a great idea of what's in some of them. But a vertical tab bar down the left-hand side lets you expand that and you can see a full name of what is in the tab that you've got open. So I kind of like that. And most computer screens are wider now than they are taller. So that's nice screen real estate management versus shortening your browser window and an already short top to bottom screen. So it makes sense to use that geometry versus, across the top. And it takes a little getting used to, but I kind of like the setup. And then the last maybe killer feature for me is the ability to split your screen. Now you can always pull tabs out and put tabs side by side, but Edge allows you to click the split screen button, and right within the browser, you can have two tabs side by side. So you don't have to do the dance of dragging things out, and then you've got windows all over the place. I think that's a great feature that hopefully other browsers will incorporate as well. Found it to be super stable. Of course, it's free. It's cross-platform. I mostly use a Mac, and the Edge version on the Mac works great. I think it's all got all the same features. And then it's got all the advancements that Microsoft brings to the table. So you've got AI, of course, built in their Copilot product, and all the other stuff. They've got VPNs built in and security, et cetera, et cetera. So pretty pleased with what they've done with their Edge browser. So if you're If you're struggling with Chrome, and some people do because of memory management, you know, things get bogged down. I think Edge is a little bit faster, a little bit cleaner. Just an alternative to try. So that's my pick of the week.
Yeah, I had to smile when I see him, putting Copilot up there. I don't know about other people, but it seems like everybody's trying to put AI front and center in everything that they're doing. It's almost like you want to avoid it. Like you've got AI overload at this point. Like, oh, here it is again. It's on Facebook and it's here and it's there. And so some people, I would guess, are kind of feeling a little bit turned off by how much AI is being promoted currently, but
For sure.
it's just part of it. So.
You have to kind of figure out where it fits
Exactly.
in your workflow, how you want to use it. So,
There'll be something else that's front and center soon enough, but for now, this is the innovation, and of course they're going to promote it with the browser and stuff. So good thing.
All right, let's move on to community feedback.
Yeah, I just had a quick mention here that I came across on Facebook the other day. I follow the First Robotics League, which is basically a curriculum type preparation for STEM robotics classwork and stuff. And it leads in grades 7 through 12 to this big robotics competition that's pretty much worldwide. And the students come together at events and compete against each other and things like that. So FIRST has kind of emerged as the industry leader in this space. They've got a lot of involvement, and it's pretty big stuff. Every fall they come out with their new challenge. I want to say this year I read it's going to be something to do with underwater, or the concept is that you're in an underwater space doing something. So lots of fun there. Anyway, they did just announce this week that they have new curriculum resources available for educators. So if you're over on their website, if you go to community and then educators, there's an area that says free education resources. And that's going to land you on a page that now starts with this robotics engineering exploration curriculum. It's 90-hour coursework for grades 7 through 12. So it's pretty extensive. I did sign up for it just to get a behind the scenes look. And I have this overview page that I'll share on the in the show notes. But basically, they get into robotics, programming, engineering, problem solving, design thinking, teamwork, collaboration, kind of all those different components and how they tie together. They get to actually design and build a robot. So it walks through the process of being in their robotics challenge, and it's built around that. But it has these units that have different, direction and focus, getting to know the basic materials and understanding some engineering concepts and things, actually building your robot, programming it to make it move, and then you get deeper into the programming and manipulating the robot and stuff like that. So it appears to be really well laid out. It's not that it's a curriculum for 7th graders and then something different for 8th graders and something different for 9th graders. It's one curriculum that you would do at any of those grade levels or combined grade levels to introduce robotics engineering concepts and using the First Robotics Challenge for the year to do that. So if you're interested in getting started, this seems like a great place to head over to grab these free resources that are available. So,
Nice.
and then finally, we had an email from Michael Vlieger. Martin, I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, but Michael
I
sent us
did.
something talking about Vibe and looks
Vibe
pretty
is an open
interesting.
source product. Pretty cool for what you get for free. It's based on an open AI open source technology called Whisper that does audio and video transcriptions. So you plug in your audio or your video file, and you hit this transcribe button, and it transcribes it into to many different languages for one. Now, it won't translate from English out, but from other languages into English. But you have different output options, including PDF, text, is it SFT, whatever the closed captioned format is that you can upload to YouTube. So all kinds of options to tweak that, to improve it, to give sentence lengths. And I mean, it is not always super pretty, as anybody that's used any transcription tools could tell you. But one of the neat things that the video talked about, the explanation video, is you've got the text now, and now you can use some of those AI tools to either clean it up, summarize, or put it in different formats that you want. So if you've got a meet, you know, if you've got a video meeting, or maybe even it's just a sermon or lesson or something that you want to take the transcript and give a summary of, or hit the highlights, or focus on something. That's what AI is really good at, if it can get the text. So I think there is a lot of usefulness that can come out of what you create with the tool too. I may try and run this podcast through this just for kicks to see what it does with it, and see if we can maybe generate a quick summary and maybe share that and figure out if that's a useful thing. So it looked pretty cool. So thank
That's
you, Michael,
awesome.
for sharing that with us. And then if you're interested in, you know, providing transcripts of things that you put online, this might be a cheap and easy way to do that. And it seems like it's a pretty accurate tool too.
That's awesome. You're allowed to run the podcast through the transcription editor and submit it to AI and all that happy stuff, as long as it doesn't rate the podcasters. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I don't. One thing that I was interested to see if it did, and I don't think it does, is it doesn't know who's speaking. There are other tools that do that, paid for tools mostly, that will break out a Sally speaking, Martin speaking, whatever, and give you more of a narrative on speakers. But I don't think this is quite that smart. So
Okay. Well,
interesting.
next month it probably will be that smart. Things are
Maybe
changing
so.
so
Yeah,
quickly. So
for sure. So,
thanks, Michael, for the tip.
yeah. If anybody else has tips or things they want to share with the rest of us, wellstech.wells.net is our show notes page. We have all the links that we've talked about here. Opportunities to comment on those is yours if you go there. You can just send us an email, wellstech@wells.net as well. And we have links to all of our social locations, so feel free to visit those. Next week, next, well, whenever we meet next, I think in a couple weeks, we will be done with the summer Tech Talk series, but more Wells Tech goodness coming your way. And we're going to start the new year with a talk about technologies related to volunteer management. So I think it's a topic near and dear to a lot of people's hearts. So maybe even before that show, take advantage of wellstech@wells.net and shoot us the things that you use for volunteer management. Maybe it's a specific database, a communications technology, some kind of volunteer management hub that you use. Techniques, processes, documentation, anything like that. Please share that with us. We'd love to share that with everybody else as well. So that's what's coming up next time. Sally, hope you're feeling better. We apologize for some of the audio. Sally was wrestling with some microphone issues, so we'll hopefully get that solved next time and get that good, clean audio you're used to listening to from Sally and myself. So thanks for listening, everybody, and watching if you tune in that way. And we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.